So where we're stood now is where the A3 used to be. If we were stood here 10, 12, 15 years ago, we'd have been...
run over.
We'd have been run over or causing a traffic jam, one or the other.
Once a main road, now a quiet path. We've let the land reset and are seeing nature reshape itself.
On a global scale, heathland is actually rarer than the rainforest. This big oak tree here, that, you know, we're looking at a mature oak tree there, it's probably 100-150 years old. So yeah, and these are breathing a sigh of relief now, and that would have been covered in smog and road pollution and all those sorts of things. People bring the landscape to life. This is in private ownership, with a big fence around it still. You know, I think seeing people enjoying it is part of the buzz of the job. Nature Reserve has grown. It's going to be now what they call as NNR, and that means it's all joined up. So that's going to be a huge way of working. So if we do something right, others can sort of mirror that and copy. If there's issues that we're having on our property, we try and curb those issues. We don't want to displace it onto another property. So we'll all act as one big entity.
A vast new nature reserve spanning 2,765 hectares has been created in Surrey, extending into Hampshire and West Sussex. Natural England has declared the creation of the Wealden Heaths National Nature Reserve, also known as an NNR. Part of the King series of NNRs, it will safeguard green spaces near Guildford, Haslemere, Godalming and Farnham. Alongside Natural England, land in the new NNR is held by the Amphibian and Reptile Conservation Trust, Forestry England, Hampton Estate, the National Trust, RSPB, Surrey County Council, Surrey Wildlife Trust, and Waverley Borough Council. Hello and welcome to the Walk with a Ranger podcast. I'm Jo Dyson. Today I'm in one of Surrey's most westerly beauty spots, once tarred with a reputation for danger and villainy. By 1906, it was one of the fledgling National Trust's first landholdings, with famous names such as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle helping to look after the site. A famous landmark along the London to Portsmouth Road, it wasn't until the opening of the Hindhead Tunnel in 2011 that peace and tranquility returned. Now it's a haven for wildlife, as well as walkers, and I'm really looking forward to finding out more. Wow, Matt, what a view! What are we looking at over here?
So this is the Devil's Punch Bowl proper. So in the foreground here, you can see all the heathers and all the trees. The gorse has just, because it's been so dry lately, the gorse has just gone over. But it would have been lovely yellow flowers, smell just like coconut in the summer sunshine. Yeah, lovely place.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. I feel like we can see for miles. What are we looking at over to the left there?
Yeah, so in the far distance you can see Thursley Common, so that looks very similar to us here. It's a lowland heath. We're slightly elevated here, so it's a bit more like upland heath. And Thursley is actually quite interesting because that's a national nature reserve, has been for many years, and it links in quite nicely with us because we are now going to be part of the King's series of national nature reserves. So that nature reserve has grown. It's going to be now what they call a super NNR. And that means it's all joined up. So that's partnership, you know, people like us, lots of other organisations that all join together to make one big reserve. And there's a Lawton principle called, bigger, better, more joined up. And that's what we're hoping to do here on a landscape scale. Yeah, it's going to be a huge way of working. So if we do something right, others can sort of mirror that and copy. If there's issues that we're having on our property, we try and curb those issues. We don't want to displace it onto another property. So we'll all act as one big entity.
And share learnings and insights and landscape. And how big are we talking? How big will the Wealden National Nature Reserve be?
It'll be thousands of hectares because we look after about 1,000 hectares now. Most of the heath that you would know in and around the sort of Surrey, North Hampshire area would be included.
I mean, it's a huge landscape already. I'm looking out in front of me and we've just walked a few metres from the cafe behind us, and you cannot see a single building, can you? It's just green shades, trees, ferns, heather, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, in the background, because we've got a bit of a northerly breeze today, I can just about hear the A3, and this is where the road once used to run on the hillside over there, and we'll have a wander in a minute and go and see where the road used to be. So yeah, very tranquil, as you say. There's nothing built up there. Yeah, lovely place.
Is it just that sort of gap in the landscape over there?
Yes,
where the
green
road,
that little green corridor, if you like. I mean, it's gorsed up quite a bit now, because it was 14 years ago the road opened in 2011, but yeah, I mean, if we were stood here 15, 16, 20 years ago, there'd have been juggernauts and everything else thundering around. Yeah, and we're so lucky now that it's nice and quiet.
It's very peaceful. And the birdsong we can hear. What birds are those, do you know?
Yeah, you can hear there's some chiff-chaff in the background. There's a little wren. There's a blackbird calling over there. So these tend to be woodland birds. We might hear some heathland birds as we get more out into the heath.
Great. So where are we going next then, Matt?
Well, I think if we have a wander, we're going to see where the A3 used to be.
Yep, I'd love that.
Okay, so you can see all the heathland behind us. The gorse has just gone over in flower now. That's normally a lovely yellow colour. And it's interspersed with sort of lovely heathers and such.
And why is heathland important?
Well, on a global scale, heathland is actually rarer than the rainforest. So I know we've got quite a bit of it locally in Surrey, but it's actually highly protected. We've got three birds that live there, the nightjar, the woodlark and the Dartford warbler, and their international importance and international protection. Scrub is our biggest enemy, so trees coming in and taking over. Ultimately, everything wants to turn into woodland, so the trees coming in and scrubbing up would turn to woodland, where those three birds won't live. So yeah, it's really important to keep this area open with either staff, volunteers, contractors. You know, it all takes money and time, but yeah, we're committed to doing that.
And being part of this Wealden National Nature Reserve might help protect the heathland.
Yeah, so we can work with our partners. I mean, they always say, you know, things are always cheaper, you know, if done in bulk, and you're always better off working with others. So, and we've always worked quite well with our neighbours and other organisations. We're all in it for the same reason. So I think as a big organisation together, yeah, we can achieve a lot more. There's a cuckoo. There's a cuckoo. Good. So where we're stood now is where the A3 used to be. If we were stood here 10, 12, 15 years ago, we'd have been
run over.
We would have been run over or causing a traffic jam, one or the other.
Causing a traffic jam.
Yeah.
So this path, we're surrounded by trees, soil underfoot. The A3 would have carved through here.
Yeah, I always think it's amazing to try and think. There was two lanes south and one lane north. So you've got, you know, a big articulated lorry next to it. Yeah, so there's three of them fitting in here. I don't know how it ever fitted, but we've put in this this hard standing through here to enable people to enjoy the view. It's lovely and level, as it was an old road. It's lovely and level round the bend, as it were. And people can see the view without actually, I mean, we've just seen some people now in an off-road mountain trike that we hire out from the VE den up there. People are enjoying it, you know. It's lovely to still enjoy rather than sat in traffic for all those years.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was about 15 people that just went past us in that big group.
Yes.
And one in a wheelchair as well, so it's an accessible path.
Yeah, yeah.
But the trees either side of us, Matt, are so well established. Were they? They can't have grown in the last 14 years, can they?
Well, some have and some haven't. I mean, this big oak tree here, that, you know, we're looking at a mature oak tree there. It's probably 100, 150 years old. So, yeah, and these are breathing a sigh of relief now. And that would have been covered in smog and road pollution and all those sorts of things. So, everything's just sort of lovely green and verdant through here now. Some willows and, birch and some, white beam over there.
Yeah. It's ever so peaceful. But so if the A3 carved through where we are stood right now, yes, where's it gone?
So it's now below our feet, and perhaps if we ever wander up, I'll show you where it crosses under the road.
Yeah. Here, we're...
65
metres. The A3 Hindhead Tunnel is 65 metres below this point. That's mad.
Yeah. So it's literally under your feet now.
So tell me about the Hindhead Tunnel.
So, yeah, the tunnel was built. We started in 2007 and finished in 2011. And it's taken all that trunk road. I can't remember if it was the day before or the day after we learnt that we were going to be, the 2012 was going to host the Olympics. But anyway, they said, well, we're going to have a tunnel to connect the south coast. You imagine all these people coming over from the continent to London. It's another way of getting people in rather than up the M3 and stuff. Anyway, it was great. And it's unified the two sides of the common because we had almost a dual carriageway running right through the common. And we had trees either side of that road. So for a little silver-studded blue butterfly that was floating across the Hinder Common behind us here, it would come to a wall of trees and a road and another wall of trees. It would never think, I'm going to go across there and find home in the Devil's Punch Bowl. So it was always this big barrier. Now that barrier's gone, we've taken the trees out a lot either side. We've now got silver-studded blue butterflies have colonised in the punch bowl. So it's a win for us.
So now the A3 is running below us,
yes,
rather to the side of us.
Yes.
And the Hindhead Common is now one bigger common.
Yes.
What has that meant for other wildlife as well as the butterflies?
Yeah, so it's all about connectivity. If we can connect everything up, and if you think about it, normally when there's a road in the landscape, we'll leave the old road in and we'll put a new road in. That's happened further south on the A3. But because we're in a tunnel underground, so you've normally got the old road and the new road, so you end up with a net gain of a road. But because the tunnel is underground and we've removed the old road, actually it's a net loss. So a road has been taken completely out of the landscape.
And so as well as butterflies, what other wildlife or nature has been able to flourish?
So nightjars, one of our three highly protected birds, never ever nested in the punch bowl. It couldn't be heard. It's a very evocative sound, chirring of an evening. You'll hear it about this time of year, chirring away. Lovely, lovely sound. It couldn't compete with all the lorries and the cars and everything else driving around the punch bowl, so it never ever nested. Now, I have to say that they, about 2 years after the road closed, the nightjar are now nesting in the punch bowl. So, yeah, it's a real win for wildlife.
As quickly as that, two
yes.
years on?
Yes.
How long have you been working here now, Matt?
Well, I started as a student in 1994. And unfortunately, with... when you do work in the countryside, a bit like these trees here, we put down roots. So when, had a young family at the time, and then as the children get older, and I can't see me ever leaving. Yeah, so 31 years this year, 2025.
And because you put your roots down.
Because I put my roots down. Yeah, like some of these big oak trees. And still enjoy it. Every day is different. Today we're doing a podcast, tomorrow it'll be something else. We had a burnt out vehicle at the weekend. There's always some either challenge or rewarding thing that happens as you do this job. Never 2 days are the same, which is the whole reason I always wanted to do this type of work.
And what do you enjoy? What are some of the things that you enjoy the most about being a ranger for the National Trust?
So this time of year, it's watching everything, come into bud and start to grow. It's new life, it's a new season. It does put you in touch with the seasons, and I enjoy seeing all the hard work that we've done over the winter months come to fruition. We've just planted up a wildflower verge at Golden Valley, not too far from here, and it's lovely to see some of the seeds that we sown come to fruition, as it were. It's really nice.
Yeah, and we've just come to, what does this say? The Sailor's Stone.
Yes.
And what view we get from here as well.
Yeah, so we can see now, we can see a good view of Thursley in the distance. We've got the ridge on the hill line there, that's the Hog's Back, and then in front of that there's a slightly browny colour. That's the heath of Thursley, lovely big expanse of heath. And as I say, that's the bit that used to be, or is, the National Nature Reserve. And then we, where the sort of bolt-on bits that make this part of the super National Nature Reserve. But yeah, we're not short of a few trees, as you can see from this view here.
As with the other view, no houses that I can see, just trees for as far as I can see. And the brow of the hill in the distance, what are we looking at there?
So this is the Hog's Back, and in the far, far distance, it was really hazy today, but that's the, yeah, we're looking towards the Chilterns over there. So yeah, it's you're probably looking at 30, 40, 50 miles away.
That's incredible. So yeah, we're looking for 40, 50 miles, yes, and it's not even the clearest of days.
That's correct, yeah.
It's so amazing. So what's the history of this Sailor's Stone where we're stood now?
So it was the 24th of September 1786, and there was an unknown sailor travelling from London to Portsmouth. He was going to pick up a boat down in Portsmouth. He befriended three Irishmen in a pub in Thursley, and they, I presume he bought them a pint or whatever it was. Anyway, they all left together, and I think there was a local or two that thought they're up to no good, you know, these three guys. And unfortunately, at this spot here, which is where the sort of headstone is, if you like, is where he met his untimely end. Yes, and they murdered him.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and they stripped him of his clothes and threw his body into the punch bowl just below us here now, and carried on their merry way to Portsmouth. They were observed by a couple of locals, and they went and caught up with them. And they were taken to Kingston and tried and found guilty on the very same day. Talk about giving evidence and everything else. But anyway, they were tried on the same day, brought back to Gibbet Hill, which we'll have a wander up and have a look at in a minute, and then hung on the gibbet up there for all to see.
Gosh, not the story I was expecting.
So quite a grim, quite a grisly tale.
A very grisly tale in a very beautiful landscape.
Yes.
We can see shades of green as far as the eye can see, apart from over there to the right, there's a tiny patch of sort of pinky purple colour. Is that heather?
No, that's rhododendron. So it's one of our invasive species. We're not too, not too problematic up here at Hindhead, but that can actually be quite invasive and can take over quite quickly. And the leaves, interestingly, give off cyanide gas. So that's what makes
rhododendron leaves.
So it makes everything underneath it sterile. And you have to be quite careful when working with volunteers, because we often have bonfires. You chuck the rhododendron on the bonfire. So in effect, you can get a whiff of cyanide. I don't think it's quite that potent. But it's quite clever how that plant has developed to kill everything else off underneath it in order to keep itself alive. Yeah.
Who knew?
So
do you have to be careful if you're walking past a rhododendron?
No. It's very, very low doses. But yeah, even after we've cleared a patch of rhododendron, very little grows for many years afterwards. So that's why we try and nip it literally in the bud before it takes hold like it has.
So, Matt, we've reached this trig point with another sensational view, with patchwork of fields in front of us. Again, every shade of green and trees. And looking at this trig point, it's saying to the right of us, to the east of us, 32 miles from Brighton. And London is, what's that, 33 miles. So, yes. Yeah. What can we see?
Well, on a good day, you can see the top of Canary Wharf in the far distance. I mean, it's quite hazy today, so you can't even see, but there's a bit of a gap there, and you often see the BT Tower and all sorts of things.
Wow.
Further around, you can see the Wembley Arches. Yeah, and we're still on the top of Gibbet Hill, which is the second highest point in Surrey. So the highest point being Leith Hill, which is the hill in the far distance over there. That's Hyden's Ball, the one in the near distance. And then Blackdown behind us is the highest point in the southeast. So we're actually number three. And Gibbet Hill is where the highwayman, this is the most villainous place God ever created, as written by
where we are right now is a villainous place. It doesn't feel very villainous right now. It feels absolutely tranquil and beautiful.
So 200 plus years ago, it would have felt very different. Quite bleak, nothing but heather and windswept trees, and the old coach road that we just walked up. Was notorious for people laying down at a log, and that would stop the coach and four horses, and then your Dick Turpin type would come out and rob the coach. Quite villainous. And it's called Gibbet Hill because this is where the three Irishmen that committed the murder on the unknown sailor that we just spoke about were hung.
How many people do you see coming here every day, or...?
Well, we've had some surveys done, and the best estimate is 750,000, so 750,000 people walk on this property every year, which is amazing, blows my mind. But it's not always been that accessible. I mean, during the war, for instance, this area was all cordoned off and all fenced completely around because this was known as RAF Gibbet Hill, where they... pretty much helped save win the war, because the bombers that were going and the fighter planes that were going over to Europe, they had no way of really navigating when they were operating in darkness. So radar, as we know now, this was called a G station. It's sort of predecessor to radar, and there were some masts here. There was a big one behind us here, and then another couple out on the common.
Wow, so because of Gibbet's Hill and those masts
Yeah, it's top secret. I mean, everything was completely fenced out, and they had their own fire station, so we still use the shed now because we're on a heathen site, tinder dry in the summer. The masts were all made out of wood. You wouldn't want one of those burning down, so they had their own fire engine on standby here.
Wow.
Yeah.
And public wouldn't obviously be allowed to visit when it was a top secret
site, but
post-war.
Post-war, yeah, it opened back up again. And as you say, walkers, dog walkers, mountain bikers, people on horseback, parents with pushchairs. Everyone enjoys it now. 750,000 of them. So it's good.
Is that one of the bits that you enjoy about your job?
The public, I always, these things, there's light and dark, isn't there, with public? We had a burnt out car yesterday, and then today we've met some nice people to talk about, what the National Trust means to them. So it's, people bring the landscape to life. Seeing people enjoying it is part of the buzz of the job.
I suppose a lot of people wouldn't realise necessarily what goes into looking after these landscapes and these paths and even the car parks for people to get here and enjoy the places.
Yeah, from a ranger team. I mean, there's myself and I've got two area rangers, and we look after 2,500 acres. That's 1,000 hectares we probably get best part of 1 million visitors across all the sites that we look after. So it's not just Hindhead that we look after. It's Frensham and Whitley and others. It's actually nice to get some feedback about the good work that we do.
Yeah, so that's three rangers for how big a landscape?
2,500 acres, and that's managed land as well. That's not sort of tenanted inland. So, and that's fixing gates, that's way markers, cutting back footpaths, doing all the sorts of furniture stuff that you would normally see on the property. Keeps us busy, keeps us out of mischief.
And presumably quite a few volunteers need to...
Volunteers, we've got a lot of volunteers that help us, and we couldn't do half the jobs that we do without our volunteers, and some of them have been retired for a long time, yet they're still willing. I mean, we've got three gentlemen that come in on a Tuesday, and I think they won't mind me saying that they're all in their 80s. And they come out and they'll paint that, metal barrier, or they'll put in that bench that's dedicated to someone. So, it's a bit like a sort of green gym. They're happy to come out and keep physically active, and it's slightly social as well. They're up for the chat and the tea and coffee at break time as much as cutting down the scrub and repairing things. It's quite nice. So we have a dedicated team of probably 30 volunteers on the property.
That's amazing, 30 volunteers. And I love your analogy of it being like a green gym, that it keeps
your
body healthy and your mind.
Yeah, mind and body. So, I think a lot of people look forward to it. I know we've had to cancel the odd task when it's been too wet or too hot or whatever, and we try and moderate the task for the time of year that we're doing, but I know a lot of people do still love coming out here, and they've been, some of our volunteers have been doing it for 20 odd years, so that sort of shows testament, really.
Yeah, it does.
So we're going to have a wander out onto Hindhead Common now. We've seen the Devil's Punch Bowl. It's the Devil's Punch Bowl and Hindhead Common. That's the name of the property. It was the road that cut it in half. And I thought we'd have a wander out here. And we'll look at some of the heathen work that we've been doing.
Matt, within just a few seconds, we've gone from that incredible view looking out to 38 miles to London, and now we're in almost a sort of tree tunnel.
Yeah, so this is woodland, secondary woodland on the edge of the heathland. We try and leave some bits of woody stuff around the outside, some scrub and some Scots pine and birch and oak, which is mainly what we're looking at here. We've got a lot of birds that feed out in the heath, but also birds need woodland. They need that sort of almost the margin, that woodland edge. We're going to come out in a minute onto a nice bit of heath. And also from our visitors' point of view, it's quite nice to walk in a more shady bit of the property, because this sand gets quite hot in the sun in the summertime. So I always think, it's quite nice to break it up with a bit of shady stuff as well as the open, dry open heath.
Yeah, on a very sunny day, all these trees are actually providing lovely shelter and shade, aren't they? It'd be quite cooling.
Yeah, nice and cool. The sand itself, it acts a bit like a storage heater, and it sort of, saves that heat of the sun during the day and then releases it. You can actually get quite hot on a heathland.
Yeah. Now we're in the sort of dappled light of this tree tunnel. Yes. And the light's just sort of coming through the... What trees have we got either side of us here?
Yeah, so most of these are oak. That's why we've got that lovely dappled light. Nice and cool. We've got a bit of rowan here and quite a bit of holly coming in now. Yeah, the odd birch tree.
Lovely bird song here as well.
Yeah, we've just come off the top of the hill now, so there's less wind. It's quite a cool northerly breeze today, and you could also hear the road noise, but now we're down into the, we're coming down in altitude quite steeply now. It's much more protected. I can hear chiff chaff in the background. Yeah, quite nice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It makes a sort of chiff chaff noise.
That sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
So its name, its call, if you like, gives it its name.
So we've come out of the tree tunnel now, and we've still got trees either side of us, but what is this to the left of us, Matt?
So this is your classic sort of heathland. I mean, this is heather. We've got heather. We still see some of the bilberry in amongst it all. So for us heathen, we always say a mosaic. So you've got some trees, so song posts for birds. You've got some gorse, that's where the Dartford warblers like to nest. So this very dense, prickly, spiny gorse bush is perfect. It's not too what we call leggy, so when it gets really tall and thin, I can't see any around here now, but they're fairly useless for birds. There's a little bit over the back there, but that, for a little bird nesting in there, that's pretty much foxproof. and dog proof and everything else.
So it's a safe habitat, a safe haven. A bird would want to nest in.
So that's the Dartford warblers. The woodlarks, you can just see behind us here, there's a scrape. So we've had a digger in and they cut a scrape, and then there's also some short heather just off to the side of that. And that's for woodlarks to nest. They like to nest on the edge, and then they let the young go out into the short turf or the bare areas and feed, and but still have the safety of the older heather to run back into.
So you've created that area specifically for them.
Yeah, slightly artificial, slightly man-made, but we've done it because years ago, commoners that are out here, they would have cut turf, and they would have done that with the wheelbarrow and a turf cutting spade, and then they'd have gone back and probably burnt the turf and everything else. So it's just, or use the bracken for bedding, and all these old ways which we're having to come in and do slightly artificially in order to protect and keep this. I mean, you can see here now we're looking at a lot of Scots pine that's grown up in the last 10-15 years. You can always tell on a Scots pine. So I can find a decent one.
They're sort of popping out through the heather, aren't they? What are they? About 10 metres high? They look quite young, don't they?
Yes, yeah. And wherever a radial branches are coming out, that's about a year. So, I mean, that one in the background there's about 10 or 12. So that's only about 10 or 12 years old, that particular pine tree. So you can see in a very short period of time how.
Wow. So those have grown since the A3 was buried under the.
Yep. And we would have cut other ones down that were a similar age at the time and left smaller ones. So it's this constant up and down, this sort of, it's in flux all the time.
Quite a mixed landscape with the with the heather and the Scots pine poking out sporadically in between.
Yeah, I don't know. It could almost be Scotland or a more upland moor.
So, Matt, what are we looking for now? You've taken us off the main path.
Yeah, so this is an area where we've got Exmoor ponies up here, and there's a couple of them on this side of the common. They often frequent this area here, seeing if we could see them. But, we've got, as I say, two on this side, and there's 18 in the punch bowl. The ones that are out here are late 20s, early 30s, so, and there's a couple in the punch bowl the same. And we had about 25 ponies. Unfortunately, they're all getting quite old, a bit long in the tooth. We've lost a couple over the last few years. So about 3 or 4 years ago, I decided to replenish the herd. So we had 4 1 year, 4 the next year, and then 5 this year. So it was lovely to see new blood coming out onto the property. And I think, in a landscape that is quite sort of plain, if you like. I mean, obviously there's trees and everything else, but it brings life to the landscape. And you see big animals, people often get excited when they see a deer and then a quick fleeting glance and it's gone. Whereas actually a pony, it's quite a nice thing to see grazing away. It's like, a bit like a safari, I suppose.
And why Exmoor ponies?
So the Exmoor ponies are, if you're going to design a pony or design an animal that could live on heathland, it would be the Exmoor. I mean, they've been for thousands of years. They've developed. They've got a great coat. It's got two hairs on it, so a short hair, like an inner layer, an inner fleece, if you like, and then your waterproof outside layer. So it's really good for keeping.
Going to duck under the branches.
keeping the rain off in the winter, and because of that double layer coat, they're really well insulated, so they can put up with that hilltop snow that we get up here. They've also adapted to eating the sort of stuff that we want them to eat. So, parts of this area up here look a bit like the New Forest, heavily grazed. So they'll always favour the grasses first. And then once they've eaten the grasses, they'll then go over to some of the more thicker herbs, even some of the heathers. They'll take out the tiny little growths on the top. But the big thing that they're good at is eating the very young and fleshy gorse. So that keeps the gorse bushes in a nice, round, dense, it's a bit like topiary, if you like.
Yeah.
And that's as we said, that's great for Dartford warblers to nest in, and actually the ponies themselves are helping to achieve that for us.
So So do the ponies need much looking after, or is it more that they are the ones looking after the landscape?
Yeah, very good. I mean, that's what they're doing. I always think of them as our unpaid members of staff doing, you know, doing some great jobs out here. Yes, we do look after them. Yes, we do check on them on a regular basis. And we have several vet checks throughout the year to make sure they're okay. But yeah, it's without them, this property would look much, much different. You know, I wouldn't be able to come out here and mow all this grass. It would just end up turning again into scrub woodland.
So the Exmoor ponies are some of the key volunteers at Hindhead Common.
Yes, they're all boys, they're all geldings. We don't breed here because we've got horse riders riding through. And, you know, ungelded, so in other words, an entire, you know, a stallion, for want of a better word, male, is not great when you've got, someone riding through on a mare, a female horse. So, we've got no mares out here, they're all geldings. Unfortunately, a lot of horsey people want the mares, and the boys are the ones that no one wants. So we take in all the ones that no one wants, and they do a great job for us here.
Matt, thank you so much for showing me around the Devil's Punch Bowl and Hindhead Commons. Absolutely loved exploring it.
Not a problem. I've done quite a bit of talking today, so I could do with a cup of tea. So we've got a lovely cafe just up the road here. So our National Trust cafe, we'll go in there and get a cuppa.
Absolutely. I love the flapjack, so I'll have a cup of tea and a flapjack, I think.
Yeah, don't blame me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the National Trust's Walk with a Ranger podcast. To hear more from this series, find and follow the National Trust podcast to make sure you don't miss the next episode.